Wow. No, I do love this church. I'm wondering about your love, though. I can tell that you love your worship team. Well, actually, you don't love your worship team. You love one person in your worship team, and it's the fellow you put behind bulletproof glass. I've never understood this. You know, the rest of the worship team is open to sniper fire the entire time, but this guy is protected. You know? I don't know what that's about. I'll have to do a little investigation on that. Yeah, this is really, it's fun to be the warm-up act for these guys. You know, they're here on the premises someplace. In fact, you know, Sean McDowell's sitting right down front. The other guys are being attended to by servants in the green room. They're enjoying the ice sculptures and sipping their lattes, but they'll be out sooner or later. We can coax them out. By the way, raise your hand if you were here the last 2 years for the Apologetics Conference. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Very good. Bravo. You know, the people at the book table wanted me to tell you this. They actually want to hear some testimonies to see if, you know, you were able to plug some of this into the way you, you know, share Jesus and all those kinds of interesting questions. They actually have prizes out there. So during the break, if you've been here for the last 2 years, go to the table and just register your name. They'd love to get you on camera saying a few words, and I hear they got a pretty good prize, so go check that out, all right? So let me do this. Let me walk you through what we're going to be doing this weekend. If you have one of these, you may still be sitting on it. It was in your chair. If you have one of these, it's a very simple operation, really, so this will just take a minute. My favorite part of this whole printed program here is the back page. This is my favorite part because this describes our Master of Arts degree in Christian Apologetics at Biola. It's been ranked tops in the world. And if you have a bachelor's degree in any field, it doesn't matter whether it's accounting or physical education or whatever, you can actually sign up and run with us in the Master of Arts program in Christian Apologetics. It is located officially in Southern California, but you can do it at a distance with a couple of very short visits to campus. So you don't have to leave this nice part of the state to go down to, you know, the middle of LA and fight the traffic there. So check that out. Read this through carefully. It's stimulating. It's affordable. It's convenient. We really did try to design it so that it would appeal to people who are very busy and already have ministries and families and jobs. So we work with you on that. So you can earn a master's degree in Christian apologetics and learn how to make a nuisance of yourself for Jesus in all kinds of new venues. So check that out. All right, open up the first page here. This would be page two where we have the schedule. It's pretty straightforward. We are right now doing announcements, introductions, and then I'll be giving a little talk. Once I'm done, Lee Strobel is just going to leap right up on stage, right? No breaks, no nothing. And then right when he's done, Sean McDowell will come up. Boom, boom, boom. We're going to take a break then, but there's a little problem in the schedule here. You may want to change that. The break is actually from 8:10 to 8:25. If the break actually started at 7:30 and came after Sean McDowell, we would need a time machine big enough to fit everybody into, and I don't think they make them that big, and so we're just going to change the schedule to 8:10 to 8:25. And once we're done, you're going to need that break because you're going to need plenty of energy and maybe a little caffeine. Not because Jim Wallace is boring, but because he goes so quickly and has so much information, you're going to need to be neurologically on it, all right? Then your job is to go home and get a great night's sleep and get back here before 9 in the morning. When we start some announcements, introductions, we'll have some worship songs, and then we're going to hear the first major talk by Sean McDowell, The Case for Marriage. Then after a break, Jim Wallace will get back up and do Delivering a Forensic Faith. And then we'll hear from Lee Strobel doing the final presentation on The Case for Christ, the evidence for the resurrection. And Lee will be here speaking this weekend, right? Is that still part of the deal? Ah, good. All right. So you'll get plenty of Lee. By the way, down at the bottom of this page, there's a funky little thing called a QR code. I think it's still called that. You can take a photo of that or actually use a QR scanner from your smartphone. And if you take a photo of that, it'll take you to a website and you can fill in some information. If you want to know about the debates we're having or new educational products or new recordings or lectures or special events from Biola, you can fill that out. Or if you'd like to know more about our MA degree program or our certificate program or our Master of Arts degree in Science and Religion, you can get the information just by taking a photo of that. If you don't want to employ your smartphone in that way, just go out to the table and fill out the card. But this is all tricky and technological. We want to show that we can do such things. All right. The page with the green header on it, that describes our certificate program. I want to make sure you know about this. We don't really like the learning to stop after one of these little sessions we do on the weekend. We want you to keep on moving. And one of the best ways to do that is through the certificate program at Biola University. Right? It can be done completely at a distance, completely online, but it's been our most popular educational product for years. And if you want to sort of kick the tires for the Master of Arts program, this is how you do it. You take the certificate program, and that can all be converted into up to 6 units of graduate credit towards the degree. So check that out. It's open to everybody, but if you're interested in the MA degree, it's especially useful. Turn to the next page. You'll see some speaker bios. We hope you read through those because we're not going to give long-winded introductions. The next page highlights some resources. And each year we have put together a different package of resources corresponding to the kinds of talks that are being given. This year, maybe it came last year this way too, but it comes in this snappy bag. Some of you are just going to want to buy the bundle of books for the bag. See? Look at this. But these are some great things, and some of them are brand new publications. For instance, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. Some of you out there look old enough to remember the old version of Evidence That Demands a Verdict. I cut my teeth on apologetics using the old Evidence That Demands a Verdict. Well, here's the brand new version. Josh teamed up with his son Sean this time, and they got together a bunch of researchers from the Biola Apologetics Department, and they went hog wild and created this bad boy. I mean, if you're not able to persuade somebody of the truth of Christianity with it, you can just smack them with it. And you'll probably make some headway. That's good. It's an excellent book. Another one of our professors, you probably heard him the first time we were up here, Dr. Clay Jones, gave a talk on Why Does God Allow Evil? His book finally came out. It is a barn burner. It's the finest book on the subject I've read because most books on the subject don't actually answer the question. But Dr. Jones' book actually does. So check that out. Why Does God Allow Evil? It comes in the set. One by J. Warner Wallace, who is a cold case detective who examines the evidence for a divinely created universe. The book's titled God's Crime Scene. This is a wonderful way to get yourself involved in some of the most important questions in Christian apologetics. You'll see why when he speaks on it. If you don't know about Jim Wallace, you're going to be just delighted to have him here. But this is one of his books, and he's got several. Then, of course, we have to have one book at least by Lee Strobel. He's got a whole shelf of them he's written. This is a fun one. He co-wrote with Mark Middleberg, an expert in evangelism, and they both contributed to this. It's called The Unexpected Adventure, Taking Everyday Risks to Talk with People About Jesus. It's a wonderful set of stories to encourage your witness for the faith. All right, all of these come together in a set, and if you buy them separately, they're discounted. If you buy them as a set, they're discounted even further, so check that out. There's lots of other resources out there. Just browse the tables during one of the break. I wrote a book called 5 Sacred Crossings. I know a lot of you have already read it. It's a little book, so it's going to take you a lot less time than Evidence That Demands a Verdict, but I think you'll get a kick out of it. But check out the resources. Done with that. All right. Well, here you are at an apologetics conference, right? I've been stunned to find out a lot of people come to an apologetics conference and they have no clue as to what apologetics actually is. I go, wow, these are real people of faith, you know? They're trusting their neighbors or their friends or their kids or their parents to come to an apologetics conference. Apologetics is simply this, offering reasons for faith. Offering reasons for faith. And you probably all know the great apologist verse in the New Testament, 1 Peter 3:15. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Now, I did my doctoral work in religious studies, so I got a chance to study, you know, most of the great world religious traditions like Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam and so on. And I really discovered something about Christianity that helped me out. Christianity is really bizarre in that it's set apart in rather dramatic fashion from the other great world religious traditions because it's testable. It actually invites people to come and investigate it, right? Most religions don't do that. They don't really open the door and say, come, dig, you know. Try to gain all the knowledge you can because it will all demonstrate the truth of our faith claims. They don't do that because I don't really think they have the goods. Christianity shocked me as a young Christian and as a doctoral student in that it is wide open to investigation. Christianity is the kind of religion that you can walk into with your eyes wide open, asking hard questions all the way. Now, you can blindly leap into Christianity if you want to, but it's not required. You can walk in asking hard questions with your eyes wide open all the live long day. But other religions aren't quite like that. And Christianity is good at dispelling doubt. In a room this size, there's a lot of people with some doubts. There are believers, Christian believers in here with doubts tonight. And there's a number of kinds of doubt. There's emotional doubt, and there's spiritual doubt, moral doubt. And those are different species of doubt, but what we really excel in is dispelling or moving aside intellectual doubt. You really aren't sure if we've got the goods. And this reminds me back when, before I was a Christian, the thing that kept me from becoming a Christian as a senior in high school when I finally made the plunge, before that, the thing that kept me from becoming a Christian was there wasn't any knowledge base for Christianity. That's the way I put it now. There's no knowledge base. That is, I knew a lot of Christian people, and they talked a pretty good game about their personal inner experience, but they weren't able to offer anything to me of an objective nature. That is, some evidence outside of them that maybe I could dig into and sort through and make my own decisions based on the evidence. Now, it turns out Christianity wasn't deficient, but the people who were talking to me about Jesus were a little bit deficient in their knowledge base. It turns out this is Christianity's specialty, offering reasons for faith, offering evidence. And you're going to be hearing specialists in those regards tonight with Sean McDowell, J. Warner Wallace, and that Lee Strobel fellow, right? So you're going to hear about this wonderful foundation upon which we stand. I have faith in Jesus, but what my faith means is I trust him. That's the New Testament definition of faith. Trust. I trust Jesus, and in doing so, I'm actually doing that from standing on a firm foundation of excellent evidence. And I've discovered Christianity is unique in that, and it's set apart from the other great world religious traditions based on that. And so Christianity can answer some of the big questions, and there's so many. One question we won't be dealing with this weekend is, for instance, the existence of the soul. You know, is there a real invisible part of human beings that we can know exists, but we might not be able to detect it through traditional scientific means? Right? That's one question we're not going to answer through the guys who are bringing up to speak. So let me take a quick crack at it by telling you a quick story of a time I went to the University of Miami to give a talk. A Christian group on the campus invited me to give this talk on reconciling science and faith, right? Like I'm the guy who can do that. You know? That's a pretty tall order. They were wondering how they were going to get students out for this talk, but actually the title did all the heavy lifting. Students were actually interested in hearing somebody attempt to reconcile science and faith. It didn't hurt that they added pizza to the menu, you know, so that anybody who showed up got free pizza. So come listen to this guy, try to reconcile science and faith, eat some pizza, and have a good time. It turned out to work pretty well because they put this thing in a pretty good-sized lecture hall, and it was almost filled. In fact, there were people standing, I remember, in the back of the room. So it was probably full to the brim. And before I go out and talk to a hostile audience like this, it was almost certainly going to be a hostile audience, I was peeking out from behind a curtain, And I like to take a good look at the audience first. I look at the audience and I, God help me with this. But, you know, what do you got for me? Should I mix things up? So I pray like that, and I never know if I'm hearing anything, you know. I have the spiritual sensitivity of plankton, you know. Now, my wife hears from God all the time, you know. Usually it's about something I should be doing, you know. So here's the idea I had when I looked at the crowd. Perform a miracle. So I thought about it for a second. I go, that's a great idea. That'll really get this lecture off and going. So that's what I did. So they introduced me, and I went up and said, I'm so delighted to be here with you. I can't wait to address this question of how science interacts with faith. And I thought it would really get us moving fast if at the outset of my talk, I were to perform a miracle. They had kind of a nervous laugh like that too, like, you know. And of course, these are all like engineers, so they were like plotting escape routes, you know, and how to grab pizza and, you know, vectors and all. So I said, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to perform a miracle because I think this will help out. So I went out to the edge of a stage, kind of like this. My toes were hanging over it, and I start to loosen up, you know, because everybody knows you got to loosen up to perform a miracle, you know. You don't want to hurt yourself. It was really ridiculous. So I'm getting centered and all, and I look at the crowd, and they're all leaning forward. And nobody's blinking because they're afraid they're going to miss the magic trick or the backflip or something, you know. And I look down here, and there's a gal sitting right here in front. She's got a camera. And I actually stopped and asked her, are you going to try to photograph the miracle? And she goes, I go, all right. Oh, by the way, on the next day, on the front page of the Daily Hurricane newspaper, the school paper, there was a photograph, man performs miracle in science lecture hall. I kid you not. So I'm loosening up and get centered. Other side. Thank you. Of course, they weren't laughing like that. They're going, one guy shouts from the middle of the room, goes, you're an idiot! You know? So I didn't know how this was going to go, but I go, I know you seem a little bit upset, and maybe I shouldn't have started out this way, but, you know, I thought that would really break the ice, performing a miracle like that in front of you. They're like, what are you talking about? You're a moron. You know, some people were getting up and leaving at that point. I go, well, clearly that was a miracle. I mean, I've studied enough physics to know that I violated Newton's laws of motion. Newton's laws of motion say that a body should have remained at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. And there was no outside force. Boom! Up went the arm. There's no fishing line up in the ceiling, no magically pulling my arm up. There's no wind blowing through here, nothing like that. Nope. Boom. It's up to you to tell me that it's not a miracle, because I got to tell you, according to Newton's laws of motion, it's a miracle. And they're like, whoa, and I pretty much lost them at that point. I thought it was pretty much over. But then I was saved by a guy who stood up. This guy was out of Central Casting, science guy. He had a long white lab coat on. He had a pocket protector with overhead projector pens in it. Glasses sliding down his nose, going a little bit bald. And it was very tall, so when he stood up to say something, it was like an event, you know. So he gets up, and he has something to say. I have something to say about this. And you could tell when the students look, they go, oh, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Hey, clearly, this was Professor so-and-so who was really going to give this guy what for, you know. It turns out this guy must have been some sort of professor of physiology or something, because he gives this amazing rendition of the cascade of electrochemical activity that takes place in the nervous system and in the muscles to cause an arm to go up. There's C fibers firing, and there's axons, and there's dendrites, and there's synapses with acetylcholine, and blah, blah, blah. And there's a line of nerves going down out cervical gap X and down to the deltoid, and when, calcium builds up, potassium's released, and actin and myosin cross over one another, and the deltoid contracts, and the arm goes up, you know? So, but he did this in a plodding fashion. It was like, you know, maybe a minute and a half or something, you know? And then he sits back down, and the students are like, yeah, you know, take that, God boy, you know? And I was kind of marveling at this. I was like, wow, that was really fantastic. You know, thank you so much for that very careful, partial answer to the question. Can anybody help him? Well, I mean, what was he missing? And people were like, ah, you're an idiot. More people were walking out and going, well, clearly he was missing something very important. You know, oh, what got it all going in the first place? I was a body at rest. What got that all started in the first place? Now they're yelling at me. I can't hear a thing that's going on in the room. But there was a gal sitting right next to the gal with the camera. And she was shouting at me from very close, so I could hear a little bit of what she was saying. At first, it was kind of like, and then finally, I could, you know, tuned in a little bit, and she was saying, you did it. You did it. This was her answer. You did it. And I said, wait, everybody, shh, shh, shh. I want to hear what she has to say. And she says, you did it. I go, tell everybody. And she stands up and she turns to her and she goes, he did it. He did it. I go, yes, she's right. You see, I did it. I did it. I made a conscious choice. I engaged in an act of the will, which is as real as anything can possibly be. And that got all of that wondrous electrochemical activity going that Professor So-and-so just described. And my arm went up, but I got it going. You see, something you're missing, and it's a missing part of your worldview, I am not my body. I'm tightly associated with this body. I mean, I can make it do all kinds of things, and so can you, right? But that's the missing part of your worldview. That's why you couldn't really argue with me about it not being a miracle. It was a miracle if your worldview doesn't have anything in it that will help you understand that I am real, but I am not a physical object. I sit inside this physical object, and I can make it do lots of things. In other words, what my goal was here is to take kind of a hammer and chisel and go pop and put a crack in their worldview. When they were completely immersed in science and physicalism, I wanted to show them there's more to the universe than they're going to be learning in the science classrooms. I am a soul and a mind, right? I'm a soul. I'm a mind. And these are as real as can be, but they're not physical, and they're not amenable to scientific research in the classical sense, in the same way physical objects are. But they're as real as can be, and we're just deriving our knowledge of them in a different way, not through the hard sciences, but through careful reasoning about the human being. See? The soul exists. They ought not to have any doubt about the soul. There's just no other way to explain this. For goodness sake, if you can't explain this, you need to go to a much better school, you know, than the University of Miami. All right. I'm just trying to get the crowd warmed up. Thank you for your kind attention. I want to hear from who's coming up next. Is it, Lee Strobel? Lee Strobel, an award-winning legal editor and writer from the Chicago Tribune. And then he stumbled into writing some wonderful Christian books called The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith, The Case for the Creator, The Case for the Real Jesus. He's got a new one coming out, which is very important to what I was just talking about, The Case for Miracles. It's coming out in March. I read an advanced copy. It may be his best one yet, so don't miss that book. Lee Strobel.